humans, welcome to Bonus Audio Things. This one about the 1975.
The 1975.
Like a Tribe Called Quest. You saw that. You say the whole damn thing. The 1975.
Matty Healy in a purple suit. Yes, this is the 1975 bonus about the other Manchester boys in preparation for the upcoming album Being Funny in a Foreign Language. We'll be reviewing in 2022, very, very shortly after this releases. This episode is, of course, being released for Syndicate 23 members first. So become a Syndicate 23 member at join.syndicate23.co to get all of these bonus episodes first, including our exclusive Junior Boys episode, which should be releasing, if not when this is out, very shortly afterwards, when this releases. But also, you can get our original 1975 bonus episodes. We've done three now, actually, because we did an original one. We did another one to follow up. No, I think we've done two. Because we did an original one to right before A Brief Inquiry, and then we did a follow-up one right before Notes, yes.
Yeah, and this is the third one. This is a really good, proper one where I really wanted to dive into their whole discography because Dan hasn't listened to a lot of it, like, thoroughly, I would say, like, the early, early years, and I've obviously listened to pretty much everything that they've released. But especially leading up to Being Funny in a Foreign Language, I think it's very prevalent to talk about some of their older work and how that has influenced them leading up to this record and everything, how it's influenced a part of their some of their other releases as well and everything, and just them in general.
Before we get into it, and like also like to go into the topic of this episode, the 1975 have done a kind of phenomenal job of being intentional with their legacy. Like, they sort of have figured out from the beginning what they wanted to be, and they sort of just become to do that. And so that's kind of be the kind of theme about how they're sort of crafting their legacy, especially in their early years, which we'll be getting to in just a moment. We just want to thank Peter at PJS Mixit on Instagram for all of your audio mixing needs, whether it's podcast or music, at PJS Mixit on Instagram. Thank you, Peter, very much for mixing and mastering all these stuff on the Syndicate 23 network. Or really the mastering. Again, I do the mixing, technically. Also on the Syndicate 23 network is Power Report, our political series, especially ramping up as we lead up to the 2022 election and beyond. Check that out at powerreport.world for all the podcast-related things. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram as well. We are going to be very, very active in that. So, without further ado, we'll be getting to the early years of the 1975 and how they started beginning to craft what they wanted to be as a band, even in that early time. Because it was definitely really tumultuous, really kind of interesting, and something that Sean is really knowledgeable in. And in introducing me and a lot of others to the 1975 through this Fine Established podcast.
Yeah, so I mean, their lineup hasn't changed the whole time. It's a four-piece band. It's one, Matthew Healy, who is a very interesting fellow, I will say that much. Vocalist, he does some guitar work and keyboard as well. Adam Hahn, who's lead guitarist, keyboards, backing vocals here. Ross McDonald, he's bass, keyboardist, and he does vocals every once in a while. Then George Daniel, who's their main producer of their records and of the tracks. He's their drummer. He does some keyboards. He does a lot of the backing vocals of it too, but he plays a really big role in the band that I'll get into in a moment. But something I think that a lot of people don't realize is they've been like together making music and performing together since they were really young, like teenagers and stuff in school. They all met together in school, and they've been just making music since they've basically been around. So it's really cool to see how even before like this, their self-titled release in 2013, they were doing a lot of covers bands and other things that they've been doing since they were, since like 2009, even. I think it was I had found an early recording of them doing something when they were still in school. So they've been at it for a while.
They went through a lot of different names too. Like they had names, me and you versus them, Forever Drawing Six, Talk House, Big Sleep, The Slowdown, most notably Drive Like I Do, because that was sort of when, from my understanding, some of the first 1975 songs that have at least like ultimately become 1975 tracks were made during the Drive Like I Do phase. They had kind of broken up, kind of gone their separate ways throughout the wonderfully musically creative town of Manchester in England. And from there, they had built that into the 1975, truly.
Yeah, and going into that, we'll go over the EPs to start it off. Like, the first EP that they released as the 1975 was the Face Down EP in 2012. These tracks actually are very prevalent to them as a band. It's Face Down, The City, Antichrist, and Woman. So the title track of the EP, Face Down, it's this really euphoric, beautiful indie track. Face down. Kind of leads up, and it's like them really donning themselves as the 1975. And there's a little like really nice beat that's out, and it's like this really dark but lovely track. And that's what you get with a lot of early the 1975, is really black and white, hence like the whole theme of the record as well. And they stick to that theme, and you see that throughout all of their works. Like, you can have your opinion on them and an opinion on Maddie and all that stuff, but they really stay true to what they want to create, like, throughout their entire career. And the thing I like about most with Face Down is you have a thing where at the end of it says, and he said, I lost my head. Can you see it? They bring that back like six or four, about a couple years later, like 4 years later, into another track in their second full LP, which I'll talk about in a little while, called Lost My Head. So they like to do this where, almost like Radiohead style, where they make songs and they might not be able to put it onto a full record, or they might have not thought it out thoroughly. But then later on in life, they figure out, hey, this is what I wanted to make this sound like. And they actually are able to do it. And then they put it out into a full release. So that's something that's really cool. The City is a really important song. And I remember Maddie saying in an interview, like, this is the track that, hey, this is when we became the 1975. This was after our phase of doing covers bands, of like doing a bunch of other random work, Strive Like I Do, Big Sleep. Like, okay, what do we want to sound like? The City. Okay, this is cleaning up. He got sick on the floor in his shoes. Band that they are today. Antichrist is a beautiful track, and they will never play it live ever, because they say that this is not who we are as a band, and it's a giant running joke within the 1975 fans of play Antichrist live. Even Nintendo was on that shit when Maddie on Twitter asked, hey, can I get a free Switch with Zelda on it? And then Nintendo replied back, play Antichrist live and we'll see. So, like, it's a huge running joke within a lot of the...
What is it about the song they won't play live?
They say
it's not like them, but like, why is what is it about the song?
They just say it's like too depressing, too down, and it's just not who they are as a band. Like, they don't want to be that sound necessarily. Like, they made that when they were really young, and they've said that they've matured on from that. Like, we don't want to be like that in that way.
Even though it's such,
yeah, it's their creep. Except Tom now play it. Like, Tom will play it and be like, fuck everything, I don't care, I'll play it. And Johnny breaks his guitar every time he does it. But with Antichrist, it's such a lovely song. I wish they would play it live, but it is prevalent to who they are, because to me, it's the production, it's the sound, it's that era of the Black Album era and everything. So that's like the first EP that they release. After that, you have the Sex EP, which again is, you have really good songs in here. You have Intro, Set 3, Undo. Those sounds really, to me, show like the creative juices that they had flowing when they were very young and everything too. Like Intro, Set 3 has this really cool trap beat in there almost, where it's mixing garage with trap, and then you have all these layering vocals in there. He still says to this day that that's one of his favorite tracks that they've ever made, even though it's 10 years old at this point. He says he absolutely loves that, and it really shows George Daniel's production of, he can mix so many different sounds, so many different percussion sounds into it, and that's really a telltale sign of what the 1975 are going to sound like with that track. Undo is just a nice indie track. Sex, this is just like their rough version of it, but it's one of their more important songs on there. They play it live all the time. It's upbeat. It really shows them as like their early years. Four or five years before they actually released it. So again, it's one of those things where they take a long time to release some of their stuff, and they take their time to develop songs and everything. But more on that later. And then to end it off, you have You, which is a really nice, beautiful track, and it has two tracks in one, where it's a really nice indie track in the middle, and at the end is this fast-paced thing about drugs, because a lot of their themes and motifs are about that. And they elaborated a little bit more on some of their other work too. By the way, all these EPs are on the deluxe version of the Black Album, but I wanted to talk about them before talking about the Black Album proper, because I wanted just to review it and talk about it as just a Black Album, not all these other things too. But these other songs are important.
Yeah, we tend to do these things in chronological order, and the Black Album is when a lot of these ideas kind of culminate together. And so I do agree with going with it in that order. And you also get a couple of fun tracks here and there that, you know, become part of the 1975 lore. This is kind of like an easier, kind of fast way to jump into it, as we try to do on Audioface. It's the speed run for becoming a like deep lore fan within a band. So we have and a couple more stops. Well, sorry, I was going to say, have a couple more stops. Well, leading into You, we have a couple more stops before we get into the album world set of things. We have Music for Cars, correct?
Yes, Music for Cars. And that is a really important EP, because they've always said like Music for Cars is an era. It's a whole thing. And I remember Maddie saying later on, like 6-7 years after the EP, like, oh, this is our Music for Cars era. We're talking about Notes on a Conditional Form. And it's really cool how, again, they're bringing back a lot of the motifs that they didn't necessarily have completely done at the time that they released it. But later on in life, as they mature, as they really find themselves as artists and everything, they bring back some of those motifs, some of those ideas that they had when they were very younger. But this, you have really important tracks. You have, well, the opening track is this really ethereal piece called a No Brain. But you have Chocolate, which is, you know, one of their lead singles off of the debut album. HNSCC, another ethereal, beautiful track. Then you have two of my absolute favorite 1975 tracks. You have Head Cars Bending, which is really nice experimental indiness. Yeah. like solid 2012, 2013 sound where you're having a lot of, you know, Jaipal released some music. You had Neon Indie and you had Tori Ma. You had a lot of these artists at the same time really making these really nice indie sounds of mixing and blending different choppy EDM sounds with indie, with layering vocals and stuff. And the 1975 also were doing that as well. And again, this is a track that all of them agree, like, this is one of their favorite things that they made. Even though, again, it's 10 years old, they absolutely love it. And then a really depressing track that at the end of it, it's called Me. Parents divorcing, and it's something that they'd play live every once in a while, but it's really important to them as a band because they say it's where they really developed like their sound of wanting to go deeper and more introspective, looking into them, into oneself, and getting that out. And again, the production is just beautiful on it.
I was gonna say, like, I think it's important context here since we're at the stop. Who are Maddie Healy's parents?
Oh, yeah. they're kind
it's
of
a funny thing about that.
Yeah, they're like, are they semi? I would say semi famous in England, right?
They're moderately famous. So yeah, like, Denise Welch and Tim Healy are Maddie Healy's parents. They're like moderately famous, you know, Hollywood, you know, celebrity people in forms of like performers, so to speak.
Yes, especially Denise, especially his mom.
Yeah.
He kind of grew up in the spotlight with that too and everything, and that's where a lot of those ideas and sounds and lyrics came from for this first, especially this first record. You get a lot of that in there, but more on that in a little bit.
And yeah, a lot of how he grew up and who he became had to. And yeah, a lot of what comes out in 1975 lyrics has to do a lot with that kind of, you know, troubled son of a celebrity. And again, this isn't like massive celebrity, like constantly in the spot, like can't avoid paparazzi kind of celebrity. But this is still like, it's still like, it's an annoying kind of celebrity, so to speak, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The last EP is the poor EP.
Yes.
Where like they have the album version, the single version of The City, which releases, and you can tell it's a lot more thought out. The production is a lot better than the EP version. Other songs, you have Haunt /forward/bed. The two forward slashes becomes a thing within the 1975 as well throughout all of their releases and everything, where they have that in a lot of their titles, have that a lot of like their posters and like tour dates and everything. They do that. So again, things and ideas that they had when they were younger, they still use today, which I think is nice. And then
that's the last thing I was going to say about the Music for Cars there. I think I forgot about. Music for Cause EP is that's another example of them doing legacy building, world building throughout that, like how they carry these motifs and styles. But it's going to be a lot more than just the aesthetic, because the sort of standard word mark of the 1975 stays consistent, even though it goes through a number of different iterations. The other aspects of their sound you're starting to get in here, but especially as you're leading up to this newer era. Now the 1975 is claiming to be like, okay, that's all done. We now start a new thing. It really is a touch point in their idea of world building.
Yeah, I think that's world building is a very good way to explain, especially people who aren't familiar with their earlier work and all of their work leading up to being funding for language. But on 4EP, you have one of their most important songs that they play at pretty much every live show that they do. It's called Falling for You. We'll be right back. absolutely gorgeous. One of the best things that they've written. Love it. It still holds its time value and everything up to this day. I think they played at almost every show, I would say. So, but again, like all these pieces are not on the actual release of the 1975. It would have been way too long. It would have dragged it out for it. So I'm glad that they're not on there on that record.
Way too long, which is saying something for the 1975.
Exactly. So again, like this is one of the things where I always say this on Audioface, like if you have ideas and everything, but they don't necessarily fit on a record, you could still release them. Just release them as EPs, release them as singles, release them as other things that you might not necessarily want into a record to make it too long and bloated. And they did that. At least for their debut album, which we can jump into now, the self-titled.
Yes. Boy, is it a great debut album. Their self-titled album, The 1975, which this gets annoying because this a band is called The 1975. The self-titled album is called The 1975. The title track on the album is called The 1975. And there will be a song on every single album henceforth there too. There's in perpetuity where the first song in said album by The 1975 will be also called The 1975. So let's just like drop that out of the way. It's one of the most annoying things I find with this band that like they do get very much up their own ass with a lot of these concept things. 100%. In a way where, like, if you happen to be cursed with really liking one of these songs, I wish you a lot of luck in finding that one just randomly in Spotify. You are going, or in any, like, music searching app whatsoever, you're going to get burned a lot.
And they admit it. They admit being up their own ass. They admit, like, being totally self-righteous and selfish and everything, which is, you know, a little refreshing in a way. Sometimes I'm like, Maddie, shut up. I love you, but you know, you don't need to run your mouth all the time. But that's how they are. You know, I'm not going to hold that against them. And having every single track in the 1975 is funny. And the first three albums, they are pretty much exact, like different iterations with the same lyrics and everything for the opening tracks. But as a debut record, ironically, when I first listened to this, I think, when did I first hear about the 1975?
It came out in 2013, and just to give the specs, it's 16 songs, 51 minutes long.
Yeah, I think I first heard about it the year after it was released. I had heard like The City and Sex randomly, I think on Morning Becomes Eclectic at the time, but in 2014 was the first time I really listened to the record, and I thought it was okay at like first listen. It wasn't necessarily my favorite thing. I thought it was really long, and I was like, all right, it's okay, but I picked a couple songs that I liked from them, and then I didn't really get into the full Black Album until I found out about all those EPs that I just talked about when the deluxe version came out a little while later, and then when their second album released. That's when I really dove into this record. I'm like, oh man, I missed out. I should have given it a second listen through. And again, this is why I love doing this damn podcast, is because there are many times when you're first listening through a record, you will not get your opinion on it. You'll just listen to it, and it might just, especially with like this with their debut record, because there's a lot of different sounds on here. There's so many different ideas and motifs in here that I was like, it's just a little chaotic. I'm not necessarily my cup of tea. But then getting into second, third, fourth listen throughs, I was like, this is amazing. And to this day, I mean, it's an incredible record. It's for a debut record, it's amazing. You have nice experimental sounds. Example, you have Money right after The City. And it's just really nice, upbeat, fun track, but it's really deep. Business people fucking each other over, basically. And like, it's about like a lot of these motifs are about drugs, life, growing up in England and seeing really rough things throughout their life and whatnot. And
yeah, growing up just seeing the international financial collapse in 2008 and all the ramifications of that, like the cynicism that the Tony Blair prime ministership and the George W. Bush administrations kind of brought across the English-speaking world. And money kind of gets to that in society, but also like in culture. Like, does he have enough money to spend? Like, kind of that kind of thing of men's status being their wealth as perceived in a lot of aspects of society. And this is what, one of the first songs, getting to your thing, I guess I was like, give it out right now. I think my favorite album as an album that the 1975 has made has been their first one. Because I, and for a number of different reasons. Yes, for a number of different reasons. I think that your first album is when you're able to throw all of your different ideas at the wall and kind of see what sticks, what your band is going to ultimately kind of come and perform out to. And so you're allowed a little bit of messiness and lack of cohesion. Like, the first Gorillaz album is not necessarily the most, the self-titled one. It's not the most remarkable piece of work. Like, really, it's just like Clint Eastwood and a lot of other songs in addition to that. Like, with time and with like admiration from the band, you can like look back at those songs in kind of like a loving kind of way. But it is still much like Clint Eastwood and a collection of other like wacky kind of tunes with a little bit of charm. The 1975, meanwhile, this project just plays through cohesively. I mean, even at 51 minutes long, it ends up being one of the shorter records in the 1975's kind of discography. But given that I generally give albums a little bit more leeway to play around in their first version, I think that, you know, this album has very few skips in it, which is, I guess we'll leave that like kind of point to later 1975 albums and like a more in that later kind of tease. But
yeah,
when you get to Money, like, I'm kind of like listening to all of the songs in there, and they definitely all have 1975 DNA, and I can definitely tell they're doing different genre inspirations and different moves and sounds to it. And, you know, I really get that kind of, you know, like, wow, this is a really kind of amazing band feeling again that I got from listening to some of their later works. Again, more on that later, because that's some fun, like, sort of audio face podcast lore also. But after Money, I found I really liked Chocolate, which I didn't like, you know, like, on very first, like, brief listen, I really enjoyed as a follow-up song to that. And then you get to Sex, which is an amazing song. I'll let you continue as well, because we are getting to like a lot of some of the grades. And again, you're seeing these versions of songs that are now finished, because we saw the Sex EP version compared to the Sex album version. And they're pretty different.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I like, that they released those EPs of them still developing and figuring out exactly what they wanted it to sound. I am a nerd for that. I love hearing, like, production, what it takes to make a song. What does it sound like when you first are hatching it out to what it sounds like when it's completely developed and finished. I love that. The thing that I really enjoy with the self-titled record is it has a theme. It has a world-building element to it. It has all of these ideas and tropes that they wanted to do, and they execute it amazingly for a first record. A first attempt, as, like, no one really knows who they are. Like, they could be seen as super pretentious. And I remember their views when it came out. A lot of people didn't like it, because they're like, they're just up their own arse and all this stuff. But with the way they made it sound, they really were experimenting a lot in a time when indie was very pivotal at this moment in like early 2010s. There was a lot of alt influences. There's a lot of different sounds, and they were starting to branch out into that territory, you know, that a lot of other indie artists weren't necessarily doing. And, like, example, when Arctic Monkeys released AM, you know, this was the same year that they released AM. So a lot of them were going more alt rock sound and whatnot. But 1975 went more experimental in that route. So to me, they were always staying a step ahead of the genre, even when they're early work. And you get that with tracks like Money, Talk, even skipping down towards the latter half of the record, you have Menswear, and then all of those beautiful little interludes that is basically just George Daniel fucking around on his laptop trying to make different sounds, and he just makes these beautiful euphoric, ethereal sounds that really connect the record together, and it paints this beautiful, almost nostalgic sound that you get throughout the whole record. Especially, like, at least for me, looking back at it now, because I've been listening to this record for 8 years. It's really cool to hear that.
Definitely gonna give George Daniel his flowers there for that. Really like making these parts of the album sound really nicely, especially like with the an Encounter and other songs like that, like interludes to go through it. But I don't want to leave behind that Arctic Monkeys comment you mentioned there, because the 1975, like as we were talking just now, the 1975, the original self-titled album. Again, this gets really confusing and annoying because this album name,
that's
the song
why I say
name,
self-titled record.
The self-titled record, the Black Album, it's also called among the bands. It came out at a time when the Arctic Monkeys were also kind of really hitting their stride with AM. And the 1975 actually got pretty lucky with this, because their self-titled album, this Black Album, was produced in part by Mike Crosley, who worked on some of the earliest Arctic Monkeys songs. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like at its alternative rockiest, like, you know, again, Arctic Monkeys define alternative rock in the early 2010s. And so it's no surprise that an album that also came out in the mid 2010s that has the DNA of someone who worked on Favorite Worst Nightmare. I mean, like, Mike Crosley has production credits on Fluorescent Adolescent. So he is very, very crucial to the Arctic Monkeys DNA. So you have him also in songs on the 1975 in this album, and you can really see that play out as well. And I think that's just like an amazing little fact and connection to both bands and both albums, because like the end results ended up being really, really good.
Yeah, and both bands to me are such pivotal moments of them, where they are always reinventing their sound. And that's why, you know, they're two of my favorite bands. I'm more on the Arctic Monkeys stuff later too, when we get to do that bonus episode, which I am super excited for. But it has as a self-titled debut record, it's just amazing. There's to go out like and have this many ideas, put out a really long indie record like this, when most indie records coming out at the time were shorter, more rock heavy. This is like really tried and true, just indie, like lots of different sounds, and that it's amazing. And they stay true to themselves as artists, and they really get that out, and they get a decent fan base from this record too. They start touring a lot. They open up actually for really shitty bands. It opened up for AWOL Nation, and what's the other screamy American band that I hate too?
Imagine Dragons.
Imagine Dragons. They also opened up for Imagine Dragons. I remember they were here. I didn't go to that show, but they opened at the Forum for Imagine Dragons before, and that's how some people first heard about them in America. It was on that tour, and I was like, damn, I would have much rather saw them than Imagine Dragons. Like, imagine like seeing Maddie, hearing all that, and then you just get to really shitty rock right after. It would be funny. But yeah, they start to get that fan base. They start to get the recognition. They start getting a lot of shows, a lot of playback and everything. And then they take time to develop their second record.
Really fast, before we end this, I'd say a song that I really ended up liking coming out of this album second listen through was Hard Out. I feel like it's one of those songs where like the DNA of it eventually plays through to other 1975 songs like later throughout. I hear some like It's Not Living If It's Not With You, like early aspects of it in this song for sure. But you know, I think it's even as you get through to the latter tracks, like you get so many different ideas through it. I will stand by it. I think it's the most cohesive 1975 project they've released so far, not having heard the Being Funny in a Foreign Language project yet, which may be that first kind of turnaround. More on that super later. That's not to imply future 1975 projects are bad. It's just that I think that this was a really high point for the right mix of cohesion and chaos the band really does.
Interesting. They take time to develop and everything, their second record, and it's released in early 2016. It's called I Like It When You Sleep, For You Are So Beautiful Yet So Unaware of It. I remember when when I heard that title, I was like, oh man, they are so pretentious. I was like, I'm ready to hate this record. I was like, I like some of the Black Album. I was like, let me listen to this. Let's see what happens. I remember when it came out, I didn't listen to it at first release. I waited maybe like 2 months or so into 2016. I was like, you know what? Fine. It was like a little bit before Moonshaped Pool was released. I remember that. It was like maybe 2 months before Moonshaped Pool was released. I was like, all right, you know what? I'll give it a listen. Let's see what happens. It starts off with the same title track thing. I was like, okay, I guess they're doing that again. But it's a little bit redone. Also, when I saw that the album cover was pink, I was like, that's actually kind of fun to change out their thing and go more in color, because their whole aspect of a band were
up to that point had been pretty dark, yeah.
Like black, white, dark, and everything. I was like, well, this is interesting. I mean, it's, the title's a complete clusterfuck, but let's see what happens. Again, opening, whatever. It's actually a different version of it, and I kind of liked it going into it. I was like, oh, okay. They have a little choir in the background with it, a little bit more production. I'm like, oh, maybe they'll have more dancey tracks. Let's see what happens. And they come out with Love Me, which is such a funny opening track of just accepting that they're assholes, accepting that Maddie is so full of himself that he just doesn't give a fuck. He's like, you know what? Love me. I don't give a shit. And then I watched the music video like a day after I listened to the record. I'm like, I like these guys now. I actually understand them as artists, that they accept their personality. They accept their narcissism in a way. And I'm like, you know what? I'll allow it. I like this. And to me, like that opening track, I was like, they're now diving into that pop rock, that indie pop rock atmosphere. And it's a big pivot compared to the Black Album, where the Black Album was more understated. It wasn't in your face as much. This one is just, well, bam, here we are. Love it or hate us. This is how we are.
Yeah, love it if you make it. And you know, it's interesting because, yes, they've definitely hit the stride. Like, oh, wow, we are actually doing really well as a band. We are able to hit our like legacy building to a T thing here. And we're able to sort of like branch out and really hit our stride with a second album. There is still the second album curse. The curse. You have to overcome, because very difficult to, after having your first album, you've established all of the ideas. Mm-hmm. Usually on a second album, you pick all of these ideas. Let's just be clear that I Like It When You Blah, 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 at 17 songs, 1 hour, 14 minutes long, is not the 1975 picking any of those ideas. It's them continuing to just be everything they're doing all the time. Now, that's not necessarily at all to their detriment. I think the third song, kind of like going love back love to it again. This conversation's not about reciprocation at all, but I'm gonna wait until you finish so I can talk some more about me and my things, my car, my living, how I'm giving it up again. And you're the only thing that's going on in my mind. On a top level, it's about people who are on cocaine, and
exactly,
it's also about
cocaine.
Yeah, it's about how they're always trying to like talk about the idea that they have, what they're trying to actually get forward and across, because they're not interested in actually having conversations with other people. They just want to like say what they have on their mind at that point. Definitely can relate, having experienced a number of people in this kind of situation, on the drug or off. And it's also a moment where you get to see a character, like A, production-wise, you get to see a little bit of the alternative funk, you know, flirtation beginning to happen in the mid-2010s that you ultimately get to proceed with the Funk is Wave wave that you get. Again, Matty Healy starts to visit this in future albums that we're about to get to. But it's a really kind of vulnerable song. It gets into what the 1975 were trying to do from their early parts, was to combine this kind of pop flair and persona with a little bit of vulnerability and digging into not just lyricism, but like really deep experiences that they've had and kind of illustrating those out in the song. And so Ugg, I think, was a really good example of that and has kind of become one of my like other sleeper favorites of the 1975s.
Yeah, it's a really fun track. And when also I remember when I listened to that on my first listen through the record when it was released, I was like, this is a really nice introspective track. But again, they are still, they push themselves forward in every record that they make, because it's that sound like Ugg is tropes that they would talk about on the Black Album, but produced and made in such a different way that is night and day difference. Literally black and white to pink. Like it is, and that's what I really like about this second record, is there's a hard line difference. Like none of these songs, except maybe Lost My Head, more on that later, because there's a string of songs that made me become a big fan of them, and I can't wait to get on that. But none of these songs would fit on the Black Album at all. Like it's just way too upbeat. Well, the production is way too happy in that way, even though the tropes are still really depressing and introspective and really about becoming oneself and understanding who you want to become and all of that. And I like that because, again, they try to push themselves forward. They try to change up and everything. When other bands just stick to what they do, they don't care. They just, you know what, this is how we are. This is what we're making, like it or not. And I like that going into it. After Ugg, you have Change of Heart, which ironically is one of the only 1975 songs I don't like. Your eyes were full of regret. And then you took a picture of your salad and put it on the internet. I still don't like it. I've tried so much, and a lot of my friends make fun of me for not liking it. I just don't like it. It's a really nice breakup song in a way. Like, I've had a change of heart. I've never got into it. I tried hard. Music video is really beautiful, but never liked it.
Yep. So I'll show my cards around here. I think that this album has a common 1975 curse in it, where it's just like very bloated. It's just like a lot of ideas out there. I think the 1975 would have definitely benefited from just picking fewer by just like whittling it down a little bit more.
And the Black Album.
Yeah. Because I think this album is very bottom heavy. Like I'll definitely give you your time with like Lost My Head, but like just to like cut through the middle of the album, I think after Ugh, I think She's American's a kind of like nice touch, because it gets into a lot of good. Like I think every good foreign band, so to speak, as I speak in like Los Angeles, California, needs to write like a Los Angeles song, especially British bands.
They made this album here. They made this album in LA, and that's what She's American's about.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about like that experience of like being a fish out of water, and that sort of experience of being like a British person in LA. Really understand that, bruv. And it's a solid song overall. But yeah, really the heat in this album is when you get towards songs like Somebody Else, near the middle, which is probably my favorite. Loving Someone, which is right after that, which is also really nice. The Sound is also a really good song. And then even though the last three tracks, Paris, Nana, She Lays Down, are very, very intimate songs for Matty Healy, I still feel like those are just like extra on this album. Like they just like really kind of bloat the entire thing, and they're really beautiful songs. They have a place somewhere, maybe on a deluxe version of this, but it is just too much all over the place for cohesion, and that's where the 1975's second album curse really happens. It's like, it's a good album, it's a good project with great songs, but you can definitely get lost in that because there is so much to filter and weigh through, and there, I would definitely think there could be a second, maybe even a third pass done at ordering the songs as well.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing about I Like It When You Sleep is they got huge successful reviews on this. A lot of people did complete 180s on them, like Pitchfork, NME, a lot of different music reviewers did complete 180s of like, oh wow, now we understand them as a band, myself included, where because they really branched out and did that. Granted, they didn't make a bloated album, and I agree with you the last part, which I'll get to in a little bit, but I think there's one song that you skipped over that I actually really like, If I Believe You, because it is about like their constant tropes of dealing with wanting to believe in a higher power, wanting to be religious and all of that, and it is such a powerful. If I told you I need, is that what you want? That's just beautiful. Like, yeah, like it's just one of those tracks that like I relate to in myself too, where I've struggled with things when I was very younger. But I love at the end, it's like, if I'm lost, how can I find myself? And that just keeps going over and over again. And hearing this live too is just one of those tracks that hits home. And it relates to, or it shows to me, like their songwriting is leaps and bounds ahead of a lot of people. They have an issue of just wanting to put out too much, and we'll get onto that more. And that's the curse of being the 1975, is just they love making music. But the thing is they make quality. They just, a lot of it just doesn't need to necessarily be there. But anyways, going into my favorite
Really fast, like on that, like I even on that song, like I was able to recognize the beauty of it, and also recognize that it did not need to be like 6 minutes long. Like
it could be cut down a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was even a specific point there where I was like, okay, I understand it, but this has to be like, throw us a bone here, like illustrate this in a little bit more thoughtful of a way. I would really like, but still like great stuff. Yeah. Go ahead and get to the middle.
Yeah. So like, example, like talk about the blood, and it's like, please be naked. That ambient track didn't need to be there necessarily because it's just slows it down too much, and that is one big issue I have with the record. Is that, but then after Please Be Naked, you get Lost My Head, which is one of my favorite that I'd say five tracks. It's simple, it's lovely, and it's the lyrics of Face Down. And he said, I lost my head. Can you see it? Can you see it? And then they actually make that into a whole track. And when they play it live, it's just really beautiful. And it's a nice little rock ballad towards the end, how it builds and builds and builds. And it really symbolizes like them as artists, them as what they wanted to do with this record, of trying to pay homage to what they did as when they were younger, but then relating it forward to what they believe in now and what they want to do now into this record. After that, you have The Ballad of Me and My Brain, Somebody Else, which Somebody Else is what really blew up the 1975. That song exploded. You've probably heard it. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, just amazing track. One of those indie songs that's like, that's just a classic. Everybody loves it. And really good breakup song. That's just incredible. After that, you have Loving Someone, which to me is one of their most important songs that they make, that they have ever, that they've ever made as a band, because it's being okay with being gender fluid, being okay with themselves. Shouldn't have people afloat. If it was safe underground, we wouldn't be on a boat. Charlatans, telepathy, exploiting insecurity, and preying on the purity of grief and its simplicity. But I know that maybe I'm too skeptical. Even guide to poor needed spectacles. You see, I'm the Greek economy of cash and intellectual checks, and I'm trying to progress. But instead of selling sex, and I think I should be. Brass, their bass player, is gay. Maddie is gender fluid, basically, and it's them being, you know what, like coming out to each other and coming out and saying, you know what, it's just, we are who we are as people, but we're people at the end of the day, and you should be at the end of the day loving someone. And I love that, like how they make that, and especially at that time in 2016 and stuff, when there's a lot of hate and shit going around, it was nice as a ballad to come out and whatnot around, surrounding all of that. And then you have I Like It When You Sleep. Nice.
I mean, like, it's especially at a time like right now in 2022 when all that stuff is still like being chased as like a hatred prevalent thing. Still important song. Yeah.
The sound was just amazing, fun sound, a song too. And then you get my one big issue with the record, where it just, I don't like how it ends. Paris Nana, She Lays Down, is just, those should have been on an EP. To me, where I wish that they did that, and I wish they did more EPs like they did for their opening record, because it's just a little too much. But overall, as a second record, I think it is good. I really like it, and they start to become more true of themselves. I don't feel like they fall into that second record curse. It's just they start to create their own curse of, we like making music, here's our music, it's too much sometimes. So it's just that.
Yeah, but as I run up the record, I think the sound is like a very quintessential 1975 song. I really wish they ended the album right around there. I think you definitely have different opinions about this. I'll say it's both like a curse and who they are. I don't think this isn't who they need to be. I think that, again, in their first album, with them, the range of being a little bit wild and out there, I think they did a pretty good job. Hopefully, I think they'll do it better in the future as well. But I think part of being a good band at a certain point, like even with Radiohead, for example, is getting all of your best ideas and learning when to refine it. When to really process it out and make it work like a lot better. And so I am much like when the 1975 are at their best, I think, are when they make reasoned efforts to cut back and scale back. They get in their own way too often, which I think is like one of the more annoying problems I've had with a band, is that why are you getting in your own way? Like, just like know when to pare back, like know when to stop getting high on your own supply so much. But it's okay. This is pretty decent supply.
I think that's a great, great way to explain it. They have a big tour of it. They get super successful. They get a lot of airtime and everything. And it just blow up, and then they are headlining shows, they are headlining festivals and stuff, and really become one of the bigger bands in the world at that point. And then 2.5 years later or so, they release my favorite record of the 1975 still to this day, A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships, which I was already a fan of them leading up to this record. If you listen to previous Autoface, I recommend them, I talk about them and everything, but after Brief Inquiry, they become one of my favorite bands.
I remember this was like one of the classic Audioface moments. I had like barely listened to like the 1975. We did the bonus episodes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'd also barely listened to any of the singles. And you had listened to all the singles. I was trying to keep you accountable with the singles rule. And I was like, listen, I'm I don't care how much you hype up this album. I'm going to go into it extra hard because I know you might be dick riding a little bit. And
as the album goes all the way through, like, to about sincerity is scary.
Okay.
I was kind of just sitting in my car driving and was kind of like, I'm so upset because I'm going to have to go on the podcast this weekend and tell Sean that he was right. And he's going to have this, like, fucking...
smug as fuck!
He's going to have this smug face. And he's going to just be like this for weeks. It's going to be annoying. And I'm just like, God damn it. They've made a beautiful album.
I said what I said in that review. It was a really good thing. You were very right. It was a very good album. I will say on, like, second listen, taking the 1975's project, this is my second favorite record. I really do like that first one. I really come around to it.
Just funny.
And I admire, again, the cohesion of the first record, where I think it's managed craziness, where in the third album, at 15 songs, 58.5 minutes long, they definitely pare it back. I think they made many better choices, but it still feels a little bit bloated. And I would say... this is a top-heavy record as opposed to a bottom-heavy record, as other 1975 albums have been. Like, the previous one was very bottom-heavy. There are some cuts I would make near the end still. But, no, I still think this is a very phenomenal record, and I think some of the best of the 1975 full stop is in this album.
100%. I mean, my favorite 1975, I Love If You Made It. I've listened to that song a bajillion times. They really set in the, and that's in the middle of the record. It is such an important song that really symbolizes who they are as a band. They are some of the best songwriters, some of the best production makers in music right now. And with this record, I mean, our review is our review. I mean, you can really, if you really want to go into it, you know, become a Syndicate 23 member and listen to our review, because basically all I listened back to it actually because I wanted to see what I said about it at the time. And pretty much my opinions still hold up 4 years later. Absurd that was 4 years ago, like fucking... time stop, please, because that's insane. I remember listening to this when it was released, so absurd that was already 4 years ago. But my ideas are basically the same thing, like it's just a little bit more well developed. Maybe there's a couple of things at the end, like maybe that cut mine or move that. That's the only song on here I don't really care for. The rest of it I actually really enjoy.
I think I songs like 2 and 11 are just like an absolute run, like literally no skips.
Oh yeah, 2 to 11 is just like unbelievable. It's just like one of those records you just play on it and I'm like, I don't need to touch it, my phone right now. I don't need to do shit. It's incredible. But yeah, like mine, I don't really like it, but I couldn't be more in love. I Always Die Sometimes. Seeing I Always Die Sometimes live was really awesome and I like how that ended. But
yeah, I think I Always Want to Die Sometimes is a very sort of like cheeky kind of like way of ending a song or like an album. I almost would have like moved Inside Your Mind maybe to be the second to the last song and maybe would have swapped mine with Inside Your Mind and then kept that there. Yeah. I think, you know, I could go without Surrounded by Heads and Bodies and I couldn't be more in love. But I mean, just really fast, let's just do Dan and Sean Hits the Hits. Give yourself a try. Really phenomenal, I think, evolution of like, and early, you know, again, this is still the Music for Cars era. This is honestly the zenith, the like highlight of the Music for Cars era. And you get like a lot of evolution of the kind of grittier, rougher sound from the earlier 1975. But this time it's very polished, almost to the point of being manufactured, but still like very kind of glitzy and powerful. Two Time, just like the wonderful cheating hoe ballad that Mattie Healy did. Don't take in the sea times, don't be more. How to Draw Petrichor, their sort of like Kid A turnaround where they make it really glitchy, really electronic, really broken down. Love it if we made it the 2017 power ballad, like anthem classic. Me and Syndicate 23 behind the scenes collaborator Riley were playing the song on a returning from a road trip, so to speak, and just like singing as many of the lyrics as we could, just like loving the whole thing.
I wish I was there. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, it was just a very, very fun song with a lot of longevity. I think like maybe not as much longevity, but like, because like a lot of the lyrics do date itself of being a very 2017 moment, a thing. But I think a lot of the events that are happening in there are like a lot of 2017. Like, I moved on or like a bitch. That's even a 2016 kind of stuff. A lot of the stuff with the migrant crisis, that's even dating beforehand. But like, it's a zeitgeist of the time it came out. And I don't think it's trying to be anything more, anything less than that. But it's a very good power ballad of the time. Production wise, it's very good. Be My Mistake, Sincerity Is Scary. Why can't we be friends when we are lovers? Zero reasons. We're just hating each other instead of calling me out. You should be pulling me in. I just got one more thing to say. And why would you believe you could control all your perceived when I really solid one. I like American America Likes Like Me is very definitely the part of this run where it's getting the most experimental. You are getting the most wow, the band is getting like full of themselves once again here. But it is a good track once you get through it. You know, I think I like American America Likes Me along with Wow by Beck will sit in a long history of questionable 2010s parody trap songs from alternative bands. Because I was actually talking with another one of my friends about how we go through phases with Wow. We either like love it or hate it. There's like literally no in between. It's like literally terrible and annoying or like funny and cheeky and ridiculous. But yeah, I feel the same way with I Like an American, America Likes Me. Overall, very solid album. Lots of bangers. I think we did, yeah, we did do 50 of the 10s. This was on there. I should do a little replay of 50 of the 10s because that was a very good thing. And yeah, really solid record. I really thought there was nowhere else to go with, but up for them. And then they toured that. Was phenomenal. Was successful, and then they came to the release of Notes in a Conditional Form. It was delayed several times. It was going to be released as a double album, as supposed to be a complement to A Brief Inquiry of the 1970s, A Brief Inquiry in Online Relationships.
Dancey and stuff, and yeah.
Yeah, Maddie Healy said that, I'm not going to brush squash this song. Sean, don't you think it. Maddie Healy said that double albums were bad for fans. Proceeded to release not a double album, but essentially a triple album. If you really want to be pedantic about it and combine Notes with A Brief Inquiry, I don't think you have to, and I think you can enjoy them both as separate projects. A Brief Inquiry being one album, Notes in a Conditional Form being two albums. Let's jump into it. 22 songs, an hour and 20 minutes long, and I remember my 1975 review in 2020, and it was a very, very weird time. They were like one of the first big bands that was like, no, fuck it. We're going to release the project. We're going to release the whole time, even though the pandemic is happening, even though it really feels like the world is coming apart with all the Black Lives Matter stuff. We're still going to release this album. God damn it. Here it is. But it was still just like massive. Like, it was just huge. It was the best and worst of the 1975, is I believe what I said in that review, because you get some of their best songs, their greatest ideas, songs that I still really like of their project, but also, like, could have gone without half of this entire record.
Yeah, that's just, to me, these needed to be two separate projects in here. with notes in a conditional form. The issue is the original idea that they had to make like a dancier complement to A Brief Inquiry would have been great, because there's a lot of dancier tracks in here and even some experimental indie tracks that fit in the dance motif that would have been great together. So like, example, Frail State of Mind, Yeah I Know, and then you get towards the end of the record, Having No Head, Shiny Collarbone. Net. Like, you could put all of those tracks together and make a really nice cohesive dancier record and whatnot. And you know, the them growing up in England and whatnot and going to house clubs and garage clubs and stuff, like they had the ideas, they had the things, and they wanted to make that. But the issue is they mixed all of those up with a lot of tracks that were more 90s inspired, and they fell into the trap that indie was doing at that time. Making a lot of like 90s-ish sounds and stuff, and that's where I was like, this album is just way too all over the place, and I don't necessarily think that they sound good doing making those tracks.
Shiny Collarbone is my brain's hold music. Like, literally when nothing else is in my brain, like, that song is playing. I really like it. It's like really groovy, but like, it doesn't need to be on an album that also has The Birthday Party on it.
Exactly.
Or Jesus Christ 2005, God Bless America, which was really like one of the most throwaway songs I've ever heard from 1975. It's like... Stop doing the America porn. Stop being America weeboos, all right? Like, just, like, get over it. Like, please move on. Focus on other shit. There's so many of those, like, house garage, like, callback songs where I'm like, that's an EP, brothers. That's a different project. Like, figure out what you're going to do. Own in on that. And stop distracting us, because an hour and 20 minutes, that is very safely... two albums. Honestly, that's three albums on this podcast in 2022. But even back in 2020, that's very safely two albums. Use that time wisely. You do start to get ding points when you don't.
Yeah, and like, example, where to me in the record, I was like, well, if on first listen to like 1 through 7, I was like, okay, I like this. You know, you have People. I love People. It's a fun, just aggressive track, just throws it in your face. You have a little the end Music for Cars. I like that little throwback to the whole Music for Cars era, and this is the last of the Music for Cars era. And they're like, this is the last of the project we have, so it's nice.
Full circle and legacy building, yeah.
Exactly. And then you have Frail State of Mind.
Love Frail State of Mind. It's a really nice sort of ethereal. It reminds me of, now that I've really gone into it, it reminds me of like a Pink album sort of redo, because it's like that sort of really dreamy turn the 1975 took, but still touching that, you know, sort of like darker, more intense personal subject matter as well. So I think even aspects of a Frail State of Mind or like other songs in here are like responses to other 1975 songs. Like, one line in some part of this album is like, I was lying about fucking in the car or whatever. I never fucked in a car, I was lying about
me on my bed, lying down, not trying. Apathy for me is an issue, you see. I just talk about the things upsetting me. And I get somewhere, I don't like it. Get somewhere, change my mind. Get somewhere, but don't find it. I don't find what I'm looking for.
Yes, Andy.
Like, it was a direct response to I Love It If We Made It. So, like, you really get that dichotomy of Matty Healy in here. And so, like, that's what Sean was saying with the second album. It wasn't necessarily a curse, but it does have the 1975's own special brand of curse. They've carried throughout with them for every single album up to this point. I will say, I did peek at the runtime for being funny in a foreign language. It's reasonable. It's reasonable.
47 minutes, right?
It's less. It's like within the 40 range.
I know it's going to be the shortest record, which I was like, wow, I'm shocked.
But as we're on notes here, because I remember we were like talking just to the middle. You're saying like songs 1 through 7 were really good.
I one through seven, I was like, I like this. And then it got through 3 songs that I really didn't like. Then Because She Goes, it's okay. But short, and then Jesus Christ 2005, blah, 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 and then Roadkill. I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, this doesn't need to be here. This is weird. Me and You Together song is okay, but again, I don't really like the 90s throwback sound, especially for the 1975. Like, they're above that. They don't need to do that. I was like, what was that? Okay. And then they get to I Think There's Something You Should Know, which is a track I really, really like.
I think there's something you should know. Myself, I'm not gonna lie. How would you know? It doesn't show. I think there's something you should know. I think there's something you should know. I'm feeling like someone, like somebody else. I don't feel myself, it could be my home. I'd like to meet myself and smoke.
But again, at that point to the record, you're thoroughly in the middle of the record. And I'm like, what is this supposed to sound like? Where's the cohesion? You just had a random country song, a random 90s inspired song. And then you have this.
You started with post-punk.
Yeah. I'm like, what is this supposed to be? And then you have Nothing Revealed, Everything Denied. And that one like is another throwaway. And then you have Tonight, I Wish I Was Your Boy. A beautiful track that I really, really like too. I guess I'll take this pain instead of your name. And you have Shiny Collarbone as well right after that, which is an amazing garage track.
But it's terrible because it's like you're having 5 people sitting in a car on a long road trip. They each have very different interests and they're each flipping not between the aux, not between the playlists, between different radio stations. And it's very abrupt and it's jutting back and forth and there's no cohesion. And like if you're just trying to like make people get along in like a car, so to speak, and to continue the Music for Cars analogy, then sure, maybe you'll do it because everyone will get what they want. But there is no cohesion. There is no like overall broader message. And from a band who's capable of creating phenomenal cohesion, really deep messages that get to the core of, you know, art and production and all the stuff they're doing, modernity and really biting like social commentary, like this band can do some of the best of what we've got temporarily in the musical space. It felt like Notes was just sort of a throwaway, like let's get all these songs out the door, everything must go, Liquidation World style, because like it is maddening, and I don't know, I'll stop harping on it now, but it's maddening how little cohesion they gave with this. They just kind of like threw it together and was like, here's this playlist when we know they can make albums.
Exactly, and that's the thing where, to me, they just had way too many ideas and they kind of panicked with Notes with what they wanted to do, and they just released it. And it is very disappointing. It was one of my most disappointing reviews I've had on Audioface, because it's a band that I obviously deeply adore and whatnot. And with that, they still, we know that they can make good records. They still can, because there's a lot of really good songs on Notes, but there's a shit ton of skips. There's a shit ton of things you don't need on here at all. that's very disappointing and lackluster. But going from there to, I mean, being funny in a foreign language, we'll see what happens. So far, like, I'm actually staying true to Audioface for once in my life. I only listened to two of the singles. I haven't listened to I'm in Love with You yet. The only reason why I gave myself a pass to listen to their second single is their first single, Part of the Band, was produced by Jack Antonoff. And if I listen to a Jack Antonoff produced track, I don't count it.
I can't get the language right. Just tell me what somebody like. Mm-hmm. Some vaccinista, toe bag chic baristas, Sydneyist on the communista keistas, writing about their ejaculations. I like my men like I like my coffee, full of soy milk and so sweet it won't offend anybody. While
so I have to listen to the second track and I judge that one a lot more than the Jack Antonoff produced one. The Part of the Band, ironically, I don't really like. And I look, I was like, it's, I mean, my review at the time is still my review when we did it. And I was like, that's okay. But I was like,
you didn't want to leave with just Jack Antonoff in the mouth.
Exactly. And I couldn't. And then I listened to Happiness and I was like, boys are back. And that's all I'll say. And I'll wait until the rest of the record. I am itching my finger to click I'm in love with you, but I'm not listening to it yet. I'm waiting until October. And I know they're probably going to release one more single and I'm going to hate my life because I have to sit there and wait. While it stares at me with big ass eyes.
It's very interesting because, like, we've had a Jack Antonoff has like hits and misses, and the whole album is not a Jack Antonoff production, right?
No, I think it was just one track.
Nice. It's not that he is always bad. It's just when he's bad, it's bad. When it's good, it's pretty good. But like when it's bad, it's really like noticeable.
He has either really, really good or really, really bad.
Yeah, and so I have only heard Part of the Band. I'm going to like stay super true to the Audioface rule. I do not know how I'm going to be able to stand not listening to the Bad Bunny track. Because it's going to be a pretty short Gorillaz album, like even for a Gorillaz record, like maybe 8 songs total. And if I listen to the Bad Bunny track, that will be 3 songs. I've already listened to the Tame Impala one. So, like, I'll literally just have to cover my ears because that song's going to be played to hell. Makes this podcast fun to do, makes this podcast interesting to do. The full 1975 special, I mean, the full 1975 review of Being Funny in a Foreign Language will be out soon for the public. Everyone listen, members, public alike. At all the usual places you can find Audioface, at Audioface Pod on Twitter or Instagram, at audioface.show for all the podcast links on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher, or Pocket Cast, any of those podcast platforms that you so choose to listen to, which you should subscribe to us on so you don't miss any of the episodes and you don't have to wait on all of my announcements for everything I do. But if you do want all those announcements for everything I do, follow me on Twitter at Dan from the Web or on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. I usually can have those things there. Also growing on TikTok at Dan from the Internet and Twitch on twitch.tv/Dan from the Web. Check out all those things. Mad busy. Also got some Dan from the Internet specials coming up in the works, especially if you're seeing this one right now. One might basically be almost done or I'll be out. And so see all those things. Content all the time. Thank you, Maddie Healy, and your doom-loving ass. Thank you, Sean, for breaking down the 1975 with us. We're really excited to hear and see more about this wonderful story band and what they have in store for us in the future, because it should be very interesting. Cheers.
Toodaloo.